Welcome to episode 113 of The Brainstorm. We're here in person getting ready ahead of ARC's annual holiday party. Good times. But before that, let's talk about Netflix, big acquisition,
whether or not
potentially competition at hand. And then Elon's been tweeting nonstop about space-based data centers. And rumors of IPO, funding round, and everything that goes into that. Nick, kick us off. What's going on?
Yeah, so Netflix has put in a bid for Warner Brothers. It is reported to be at $27.75, a mix of cash and stock. It values the company at $72 billion and an enterprise value of $82.7 billion. It's focused primarily at the Warner Brothers studio, the library, HBO slash HBO Max. I'm not even sure what it's called. It's changed a few times. Since that news came out, we also knew that Paramount was the other potential bidder. The board decided to go with the Netflix bid, but over the weekend into this week, Paramount has gone on the offensive. They've put now in a hostile bid, so they're going directly to shareholders with a $30 all-cash bid for not just the studios, the library, everything that Netflix wants, but also a part of their deal is the networks as well. So CNN and a bunch of other assets that were going to be spun off in Netflix's version of their bid, which shareholders would have gotten anywhere from $2 to $3 in value of that spinoff. Paramount wants it all for $30. That, you know, puts the valuation $100 billion plus. And so now we have this game going on, a dogfight. There's rumors Netflix might come out with a new bid. We'll see what happens, but I think very big implications for the streaming market, for theatrical, for the networks. A lot is at play here. This is one of the largest, if not the largest, entertainment acquisitions of all time. So we'll open
every company that buys Warner, it like turns out to have squandered resources, and it's happened multiple times. There's AT&T, there's AOL, Time Warner. Is this the same game again? Like, if you were Netflix or Paramount, is either of these companies actually going to do well out of paying this much for this?
Yeah, I think it centers around your belief in the library. I think if you're looking at the valuation, and it's creeping up into the $100 billion range, you have to have a firm belief that the library of content that Warner has built over a century plus of filmmaking, which is Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, I mean, you name it, they have it. The DC universe, there's so much content IP there.
Do you own the full IP for like merchandising and all of that?
Yes, yes. You get everything that comes with owning the content. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you have a strong belief that you can take that and unlock it, a la when Disney went out and purchased Marvel and turned it into this massive franchise.
Yeah, but Disney paid, I think, $4 billion.
$4 billion.
This is times 20.
Well, and what, you got like 20 Marvel movies, so you just need about 200 Harry Potters.
Right. Well, and then the big question is, how do you unlock the monetization side of the equation? You can be Netflix and say, oh, we're going to make a new Harry Potter TV show, and we're going to put it on Netflix, and we're going to charge a dollar or two more to our subscribers. Or you could, you know, do what Disney did, which was create a ton of individual films, put that out into theaters, and then make $1 billion a film. Now, Netflix doesn't want to go the theatrical route, or they want to shorten the exclusivity window for theaters. So the monetization on this deal is going to look very different than the Disney Marvel purchase. And we're in this new age where Netflix is not really just competing with Paramount, with Disney Plus. They're competing with Fortnite, with Sleep. You know, wherever a consumer's eyeball is at the end of the day or during the day is where Netflix is considering that they compete. So they want all of this IP. They want to roll it into just the Netflix platform. I think they'll keep HBO and HBO Max as a separate add-on subscription for some period of time. But I think the idea is really, how do you leverage and monetize this massive, what would arguably be under-monetized library of content? Because it's pretty fair to say that HBO under Warner has been a you know, a subpar subscription. I think if you look at, and there's different estimates out there, they have anywhere from 1% to 2% of total TV time share. So it's not a huge amount of time that you're buying with this acquisition in terms of consumer spend. And the subscription side, I think Warner, if you were to just look at HBO Max, it's about 120 million subscribers. 75% is the estimate of those subscribers that also subscribe to Netflix. Overlap,
yeah.
So you're not gaining a ton of new eyeballs. You're not gaining a ton of more attention. You're gaining this massive library of content.
Do you think they would take HBO and then say, you know what? Netflix is now only ad-supported. And HBO is actually our paid-for platform now. And maybe Netflix still has a subscription, but it's much lower. And they basically turn all of Netflix into the ad tier. And then HBO is the premium kind of like place where you get some of the more premium movies and stuff. Yeah. And you pay for it. And more of their movie content, which gets like movie content with ads is pretty bad. Show content with ads, not as bad. Like, and so they position it that way, where they have kind of like theatrical and movie here paid for, and then big, long ad tier service.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think about how they unlock added value in terms of price segmenting the market. If you can continue to drive Netflix premium, so no advertising, up at $1 or $2 every couple of years, you are going to force more people to reconsider and move into the ad tier, which is priced at $8 or $9 a month, whereas your premium's going from $20 to $25 to $30. And that advertising, while it's lower from a direct monetization standpoint, what they'll be able to drive on an indirect side, so the advertising business, one, it's very high margin for them. It will be incrementally. And then you can drive anywhere from $10 to $15. So on a net basis, that advertising monetization is almost at par or parity with your premium subscription. And it's a whole new business line for you. You don't have to, you know, force more dollars out of your consumer. And I think that is the idea over time, is to price segment the market such that advertising becomes, if not 50% of total subs, but maybe even the majority.
As a consumer, I hate the direction you're talking.
You hate it because ads on television have historically been bad. I think about this a lot when people say, I hate advertising. I think what most people think of when they say that is the reoccurring car commercial and, you know, the insurance commercial that they see time and time again when they watch linear television. But when you're seeing Google advertisements and Amazon advertisements, you don't even know, right? Like the amount of traffic that they're able to drive.
I definitely know when there's a pre-roll ad before my YouTube video.
I'm like, forget banner. I'm not talking about banner ads. I'm talking about, you know, like, call it, you know, just sponsored products on Amazon, or when you're paying for AdWords on Google.
Placement. If it's all product placement, then I'm good. Just have everyone
back to soap operas. We're selling soap again.
Exactly.
I have faith that advertising at scale, when it's personalized, doesn't feel as intrusive as what we've historically been used to in linear television.
I don't know. It's like even Google. It was like before AI came around, it's like they were at the point where the whole first page of results was ads.
Yes. There's a writer, Cory Doctorow, he calls it the inshittification of the internet.
Uh-huh.
And the idea is that, like, as you're building a platform, you offer great value to the consumer, great value to the enterprises, because you're just trying to take share. And then you get to a point where first you start kind of like still offering great value to the basically polluting it with ads and everything else. And then you start trying to extract also from the enterprises as well and kind of pull it all into your monopoly. And so it just makes the user experience worse and worse and worse.
So is this a point of, is Netflix needing to inshittify?
I think they want to, and they don't believe they are shitifying the platform. I think they believe that they can deliver a pleasant ad experience. That, again, I actually believe most consumers are very tolerant of advertising, especially when the other option is, well, I have to pay 2 to 3 times more.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's, you know, not the most pleasant experience, but when done right and tastefully, I think it can be tolerated in mass, which it has historically been. Like, we are okay with, we're bombarded with hundreds of ads every single day, and you notice maybe a few of them, and the ones you do notice are either really good or really bad. And the really bad ones spoil the whole market for the rest of the good ones.
Like, successfully completing this acquisition, does this mean Netflix will have to turn around and do more sports rights kind of sign-ups and stuff to, like, populate their ad-supported tier?
I think so. I think sports have been the major hurdle as to why we haven't seen more advertising dollars flow from linear into CTV or streaming. And Netflix has been going after different sports rights. They've gotten WWE, if you consider that a sport. You know, all of the major streaming platforms that are run by big tech companies are actually the ones getting these new sports rights. One, because the sports rights deal, if you think this is costly, look at the amount of dollars that each individual sports rights, like on an aggregate basis, has gone up over the past two decades. Like, we're talking about the NFL is encroaching on tens of billions. Every single time these contracts are renegotiated, you're adding billions of dollars of value to the league itself. And now, when you have broadcasts in decline and cord cutting forcing these companies to move into streaming, there's only a few companies left with balance, you know, cash flow and balance sheets to be able to actually bid for sports rights. So Netflix, it's not even that they're going to want to, it's actually just going to fall into their lap, because they're only going to have to bid against Amazon and Apple, and it, you know, they'll be competitive in that. Because
what about like Disney, ESPN is trying to charge $35 a
month.
Well,
so it's like they only need to compete against them. That's like OpenAI saying we only need to compete.
But
against
my point
them.
Is,
it's like, yeah, it's $1 trillion.
Those are terrible examples in the, well, you only have to compete against them. It was more of a, in aggregate, there is less competition. There are more, it's fierce competition, but it's not tens of companies bidding. It's maybe four or five at this point.
We have about 9 minutes. Do we want to switch to SpaceX, or do we want to make a final point?
No, I would say this story is far from over. Their hostile bid is out there. We don't know exactly where this is going to lean. It may end up in the courts for a year plus. So definitely, we'll probably talk about this again in the future. So,
and hopefully our Netflix remains reasonably priced and ad-free until then.
I doubt it.
Also, you said if we can consider it a sport, and immediately I just thought, I was like, okay, maybe it's like, if it's a sport, kids have to be able to do it, and there's not a WWE Kids League.
Well, I think
I bet there is.
Is there
somewhere?
I mean, I know there's a true definition of sport, but I think if you can't bet on it, that means, you know, maybe the outcomes are predetermined.
Well, with prediction markets, you can bet on anything.
Yeah, it's
true.
But I think from the context of the streamer perspective, a sport just has to be something that has natural breaks in it in which you can insert ads. Mm-hmm. As in, like, the NFL is incredibly valuable, not just because it's the NFL, but because
it's
so slow. There's so many breaks in the action that allow for ad insertions. So that's why soccer is, like, less valuable.
Mm. Yeah. But you have all those nice placards around the field.
Yeah.
All right. Moving to SpaceX, space-based data centers. Elon has been tweeting nonstop about it, aside from the EU.
And you should give yourselves some credit because you helped break the news, because he was responding to you.
Oh, no. He gave more information, but there were rumors of a round and a potential IPO. And so then I tweeted out, if you're randomly thinking about how much SpaceX is worth, and I put the link to the valuation that we did with Daniel, who's not here, and Mach 33. But now we've got to update it, because that did not include space-based data centers. Yes. That was entirely driven by Starlink, D2C, and then a little Mars outlook and book value of Mars. And so we've got a whole new avenue to explore.
Basically, we have like more work to do. And Elon was like, this is more work you should do. And we're like, yes, we probably need to do more work here, because he's planning on launching 100 gigawatts of compute into orbit, according to him, by 29 or 30.
Well, so. And can you break this down for me and the listeners? Because he's talking about rail guns and interconnected satellites and sending, you know, gigabits of data down to the ground. Like, explain this to us, because to me it seemed like sci-fi.
It is a little bit like sci-fi, yeah. But conceptually the idea is that right now, OpenAI and XAI and Google and Microsoft and Meta are all out there trying to spend tens of billions of dollars, extending into the hundreds of billions of dollars to build data centers, you know, on Earth, just on Earth. And it's hard to build things in some geographies, like most of the U.S., and it's really hard to build things and attach power to them. And so as you're trying to efficiently deploy this tens and then hundreds of billions of dollars, you run into scaling constraints. Like, gosh, we need to acquire all this land. We have to find turbine generators to power our data centers. And Elon's looking out and saying, you know, I have the cheapest launch vehicle to launch things into space. If you go in space, you actually can have like a lot of surface area of solar panels that are always facing the sun, and you can attach a computer to them. And hey, actually, if you're not boxing them to or doing too much density, you don't have that big a cooling issue. And so instead of dealing with all of this painful bit by bit putting together data centers, let's just loft the data centers where there's infinite real estate and infinite power.
And then the moon element is just, if you're starting, it's like getting off Earth sucks. It's like a gravity well, as they say. But it's like if you're on the moon, less gravity, you don't need rocket engine propulsion. You could use a different form of propulsion to get stuff into Earth orbit. And if you've got robots up there and it's a lights out factory, then it's like you fundamentally separate from the Earth economy in a certain way.
So that is a little sci-fi. You need a working Optimus robot that's going to work on the moon. You need to establish a moon base. You need to, it's a lot of engineering and stuff to go on there. But in terms of the elements to do space-based compute, he has a lot of the ingredients together and has extraordinarily ambitious plans to do it, apparently.
And it's like, so takeaway of all of this, it's like SpaceX already has more satellites in orbit than everyone else, and everyone's like, okay, there's going to be like 40,000 Starlink satellites. It's like, okay, now we're talking a million. It's like, why aren't there millions of satellites, right? So it's like a fundamentally different order of magnitude, number of things in orbit. The other is, it's like, I think this is, China's been crushing solar for the past 5 years. This is, I don't want to call it the bottom, but it's like solar was in a trough of disillusionment, I would say. Yeah. It's like, this is probably the end of that. Mm-hmm. It's like Elon's like, okay, we're going to go for it. And I'm assuming that they're going to build it. Probably not in China would be my assumption. And so then, you know, when Elon goes after something like this, capital follows and then company creation follows from a bunch of other players, right? Same thing happened with Optimus. It's like there were humanoid robot companies, but then Elon's like, okay, we're going after it. And now there's, you know, hundreds of these. So solar, it's good. I think it'll have terrestrial, terrestrial implications as well.
Right.
And that's another, I think, positive externality. We only have a few minutes left here.
I have one question. Yeah. So Starlink is low Earth orbit. Where would these sit?
I think they would sit in low Earth orbit as well, is my assumption, or mid Earth orbit.
Yeah. They have to be sun synchronous, right?
Yes.
So they're like always facing the sun.
So further.
Yeah. So they would be further up.
Right.
Because you wouldn't want them also coming crashing down as often as Starlink.
Well, it depends if you want your depreciation cycle for these chips to be 3 years or if you want to extend them out to 7 years.
Yeah, that's big true. Question going
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Right. I mean, net, it's also from a SpaceX perspective, you have a lot more lofting. If you think about it, we thought of it as just a bandwidth company. They're selling bandwidth to Earth. They're using the capital to build more rockets. Ultimately, they're going to export the capital to Mars and build something. Well, we did hypothesize that the moon would be a better place to service Earth orbit satellite operations because, like, it's lower energy to get off the moon. Turns out that's the direction they're shifting the plan in terms of servicing Earth. And now they're not just selling bandwidth, but they're going to sell tokens to the likes of XAI and other AI companies. And so they have effectively a separate business line they're trying to launch, so to speak, and that will require launching a lot more satellites. So they'll have, you know, a lot more reasons to launch, which is great because they're building such an amazing launch vehicle. And they'll have a whole other kind of like demand curve to hit with their services.
And so then maybe last point here, and Brett, I think you tweeted this out and got a response, which is this is the final, I don't want to say final, this is the ultimate convergence of the companies, right? You've got Tesla making chips, you've got SpaceX launching and manufacturing satellites, and you've got XAI as a natural customer here.
And so, X when is where you find out about all of it.
And X is, X is part of XAI. So,
no spot for the boring company, though, unless you're digging holes on the moon.
Which maybe. Maybe more for Mars.
For Mars, yeah. You need the boring company.
And maybe we'll just, do you want to do a quick ledger?
Do you have a market picked out?
No. Oh, man, we're really dropping the ball on the ledger element here.
Okay,
but
got one.
Okay, go.
I've got one. 2027, 45% chance that Databricks announces its IPO in 2027.
Is this a market?
I just looked it
you
up.
You just looked it's, it up? It's on 45%?
Yeah. It might be 50%.
It can be before, or they're saying in that year?
In that year, they officially announced their IPO, which I would interpret. I didn't look at the contract. I assume it's file an S-1.
Hmm. Yes.
No.
I'm going yes.
All right. I think our next episode, let's look back. Verstappen's so close.
Oh, yes.
He was so
Lando
close.
Lando came through for me. It was great.
It was, yes. All right.
F1 is kind of boring, as it turns out. They never change spots.
It's a like, terrible viewing experience. Yeah. You have to wake up at 6 a.m. or 4 a.m.
This race was at 8 a.m. It was kind of perfect.
NFL has Sundays, and F1 has odd hours throughout the week.
It's
terrible. They need to figure that out.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.